This is Akashvani. In the weekly program Current Affairs, we now bring you a discussion on India and AI. The participants are Mr. Shali Ittiman, digital media expert, and Jiten Kumar Jain, IT and cybersecurity expert. The moderator is Momita Chatterjee Bakshi, journalist.
Artificial intelligence, AI, and Gen AI are more than just buzzwords. They are transformative, disruptive technologies that are promising to revolutionize sectors such as healthcare, agriculture, finance, education, auto, travel and hospitality, and much more. Take the case of healthcare, where AI can help in diagnosing diseases, prescribe the best treatments for critical illnesses, even aid preventive care and patient monitoring. In education, AI can support education by speeding up mundane and administrative tasks, transforming teaching and research methodologies, and enabling more personalized and in-depth interactions. At the same time, the rapid advancements of AI has raised questions around risks and impact on jobs. Ethical issues and responsible AI are topics that are being intensely discussed and deliberated in all global forums. The balance between potential of AI and its responsible use will indeed optimize AI's positive impact on lives and livelihoods in societies and businesses in India and across the world. To talk about India and AI, my guests today are Shali Ittiman, digital media consultant, and Jiten Jain, IT and cyber expert. Thank you for joining me on this discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with a very basic question. What is artificial intelligence? How is it different from the technologies that we have seen in the past? How long has it been around? And how is AI going to really impact society and businesses?
If you look at AI, it has been quite a journey. If you say from the 1950s, 60s, 70s, we have seen artificial intelligence in all kinds of forms and shapes. Let's take the basic calculator. Even that is artificial intelligence. As long as it can compute, it was artificial intelligence. It took us beyond the human capacities to do certain things. And so AI has been around. But it has really been a journey if you talk about AI, because AI has now got to narrow spaces. There is artificial narrow intelligence. And from here, we are talking about, Elon Musk says that by 2028, we would have crossed that border also, and we would have got to general intelligence also, where almost artificial intelligence reaches the human capacity to think. And then the beast happens, where you're talking about super computation. And so at that point, so this is kind of a journey that starts from AI and goes on to this superior version of AI, which people are speculating about. We know it's getting there, but there's a lot of speculation in that area.
So AI has been around for years, isn't it?
Yes,
for almost
yes.
10 years now.
Yeah.
Why is it that it has suddenly started making headlines over the last 1 year or so? Is it because of ChatGPT? Is it because of Gen AI and the possibilities that that brings into, you know, real world?
Yes. So generative capacity has actually changed the paradigm. Artificial intelligence was there. So there was a subset of uses that we could think about. But generative AI really has changed the ground realities here. That's because now it's beginning to generate content. So you train data and you derive certain things from data. That was artificial intelligence. Now it is going beyond its data, and we are talking about a time when it trains itself and starts to make its own rules and arrive at its own kind of decisions. So that's been the transformational leap. That's a journey by itself. So we are at the starting stages of it, but we'll get to a point where you'll think that it's almost beginning to compete with humans' capacity to think and perform.
If we step back and look at, global cases, globally, what are some real world applications of artificial intelligence? And are we starting to see compelling use cases emerge yet for AI in the global context? How can AI really improve outcomes?
Well, myriads of possibilities here. I mean, just in India's case, a lot of work has happened at the Supreme Court level. You know, we have been combating the pendency of cases in the court across the country, from the lower courts to the higher courts to the Supreme Court itself. And under the former Chief Justice, there's a lot of work has happened, and AI has been the principal tool there. So we are looking at translations of case records that are available with the court. We are also looking in some way of assistance of clearing the pendencies, though that's, of course, a human factor there. But a lot of changes have happened there. In the fields of agriculture, climate change, AI plays a role. You look at disaster management. Disaster is a big problem now, but in cases of disaster management, prediction, better prediction, all that AI has now been a very helpful assistant. We haven't reached the stage when we can hand over everything to AI, We still need the human, but it has really helped the causes. So let's say 30-40% of the workload and the work efficiencies have improved because of the coming of AI and all the subsequent tools that have come along.
So let's come to the Indian context. Which are the sectors that are likely to see the maximum benefits from artificial intelligence? Mr. Jain, would you like to take this question?
I think in India, we have seen the implementation of AI in last 5 to 6 years in multiple sectors. For example, healthcare, where we are seeing growth of AI-powered solutions for improving diagnostics, patient care, and drug discovery. Tamil Nadu is one state where they have this e-Paravi portal to detect cataracts, you know, using your x-rays and eye vision for eye vision and all. But the point is for health, you see, we in India, if you go to rural villages, the infrastructure of healthcare is not up to the mark as you when you compare it to urban cities and all. And then that same goes for the quality of doctors. So you would recall 7-8 years ago, IBM introduced a tool called IBM Watson, which was basically assisting doctors in diagnostic of several things like cancer. For example, suppose if a particular doctor sitting in a rural area who's just got an MBBS degree, who doesn't have an MD or, you know, a postgrad, he's prescribing certain medicines to a patient. So the AI would pop up saying that, you know, in 500 cases with similar symptoms, this particular dosage has been prescribed in this quantity, you may like to reconsider. So AI was used in an assistive state to help a doctor in healthcare. We have seen use of AI to analyze x-rays and give reports. We have seen use of AI by diagnostic labs to prescribe a likely treatment for or indicative treatment for certain parameters when you go for blood tests and all. So, I mean, healthcare is going to use AI in many different ways when it comes to analyzing data, you know, analyzing x-rays. We're talking about smart AI being used for healthcare by Google, where, you know, you'll be able to, you know, detect several illnesses by using a mere eye scan. So that's number one. Second, we have used AI in defense and security of India. In Indian forces in the last 4 to 5 years, almost all police forces have been using facial recognition systems to detect suspicious elements, suspicious activities like carrying weapons or identifying terrorists which are in the databases. And that has all been done using AI and facial recognition. So that's two. Third, AI now is being proactively used in agricultural sector for precision farming, for predicting climates, for predicting crop patterns, for predicting how much quantity of pesticides you want to use. So I think there's going to be multiple sectors. In financial ecosystem, we are seeing, you know, use of AI for fraud detection. So there is a pattern of transactions in a particular account. The system is able to alert the bank, system is able to alert the authorities. System is able to, you know, alert, you know, in case if there's a tax evasion because of multiple suspicious invoices. So in lot many ways, we are still in the beginning of, AI revolution in India, but we are moving on to it. We are using AI in defense now. You have seen autonomous weapons being used by Indian Air Force, you know, swarm of drones, and they're all using homegrown AI. So in lot many ways, India is still in the beginning of its journey, but we are catching up with the world.
Okay. Shali, if you could just tell me, how big do you think is this AI opportunity for our society and businesses? And should India really approach AI, brace it as an opportunity only, or fight it as a threat?
Well, no question of fighting it as a threat. I don't know. A lot of people do think about it as a threat. There are issues with it, but then we have to be part of this wave. And it is about grasping the leadership positions, you know, allowing the Western worlds or the developing worlds or people who are at the forefront of this to allow them to take leadership position comes with its own kind of risks. AI is also about data, the purity of the data, the kind of data that is being treated. Every country, every culture comes with its own kind of biases in the data. So if you allow the Western world, for example, to take the leadership position in it, we may have some losing ground there. So we need to come up to par and then probably take on leadership positions. There are a lot of disputes around that, whether we'll be able to do. I'm sure we have the capacity to take the leadership position in this. Yes.
So in March this year, the Union Cabinet approved over ₹10,300 crore for India AI Mission. How do you see the India AI Mission driving India's aspirations to be at the forefront of AI innovation? And where do you see India in the AI race in, say, the next 5 to 10 years? And I would want both my guests to jump in on this question.
So I think there are three fundamental challenges India has been facing, as my fellow panelists were rightly pointing out. The whole capacity and the capability of an AI system, any machine learning model or language learning model, lies in the data you have and the quality of data sets you have. India today generates one of the largest data sets of anything in the world, be it, you know, how many people have cars are crossing a toll tax, how many people are paying taxes, who's buying what, how many online transactions. But the problem is, till almost 5 to 6 years ago, most of the data was with government. It was unstructured. It was, you know, not available digitally, and especially at least for public uses. But in last 5 to 7 years, MyGov, especially, and the other initiatives by PMO have been making a lot of government data in API formats available to the public to train their models. Idea is that the world has been using Indian people to train their own machine learning models. I'll give you a simple example. You would have seen this many apps on Facebook who would be saying that upload your photo and see how would you look 30 years from now, 40 years from now.
Right.
You would have seen, you know, how did you look? I mean, basically, they were trying to train their artificial intelligence to predict the changes in a human face if you were to detect a terrorist using an old photo. We had seen many, many examples that most of the language learning models or even the facial recognition systems used by Google or Facebook, they have all, you know, majority of the data set was Indian because for 60% to 70% of their users come from India. So invariably, we've allowed our people to become guinea pigs for these Western companies to train their own machine learning models. Second challenge was the complete lack of digital infrastructure in India. Like, we didn't have a, you know, great cloud infrastructure in India till many years back. This, you know, MakeNaath initiative by, you know, MeitY has not taken off well. They had to allow finally 16 to 17 foreign vendors to host the cloud infra in India and government data on it. Now Hiranandani Group, Adani's Reliance is coming in, but we're trying to catch up the bus. We missed the bus initially. So we still do not have, let's say, do we have 10,000 GPUs in India today? No. But the government is trying to create that. Then do we have any regulation for the ethical use of AI? Do we allow our startups to weaponize AI and sell it to foreign vendors? There is no regulation currently. How do you deal with the biases in the facial recognition? For example, if you go to China, the AI facial recognition, which is used by Huawei, anybody with a big beard, they consider suspicious. But if you go to Middle East, that's not. So there is an inherent bias in the way you train the data. And if you want to avoid that, especially in a multi-religious and multicultural society like India, that is going to be a huge challenge. And in the absence of regulation, it's going to be very, very difficult. Third, what about poisoning of data? The biggest challenge in any AI-based machine, especially when you're going for autonomous robots, autonomous killing machines, tomorrow if somebody is able to poison the data which you're using to train your AI systems, and let's say self-driving car, if you're able to corrupt somebody's learning data and make a car drive in a red light and there is an accident, whom do you hold responsible? And if there are mass accidents, what do you do? Because somewhere down the line, there will be thousands and thousands of cars on the streets which will be using, or, you know, which will be, you know, driving autonomously. And tomorrow, if they start to learn something from a new model or a new data set which is corrupted, what happens? So that is a challenge where regulation comes in, where you regulate. Let's take the challenge of deepfakes. There is a flood of deepfake, you know, pornographic videos of famous Bollywood personalities. We have never seen the use of generative AI to defame and create the nudity of famous personalities. But when it comes to politicians, we suddenly woke up and we had this new IT rules which came in to deal with deepfakes. We had a new dedicated officer to take down the stuff. But by the time, it is already too late. There is no Bollywood personality today in India whose pornographic deepfakes are not available online. So there are challenges on multifolds, and they can only be solved in effective and proactive regulation today.
Right. Shali, would you like to come in here on how you see the India AI mission? And if I can just add to that, you know, there are critics who say that AI's mainstream adoption, or even GenAI's mainstream adoption, has been slower than expected, despite the giant build out of infrastructure. So between the headline and the hype on AI, where do things stand today?
No, I don't think that this is slow progress. We are doing well. It's only that the speed of transformation is so huge. When you talk about 5 years and 10 years, you don't know what changes would come in technology. I mean, so many things are happening. The data sets are increasing because it's the human capacity to be interactive with knowledge. It's not as if the data rests in a silo. It is about the interaction between various data sets that are happening now. So, for instance, we have a lot of genetical data now. You have terrestrial data. You have data coming from under the ocean surfaces. Now you have space data with Elon Musk going everywhere. This humongous amount of data. What will happen? How will these machines work on these varied data sets? And what kind of information intelligence can be derived from it? That's what we have to see. We are doing fairly well on the generative AI front. We have done our bit. The world is kind of connected in certain ways. We can't say that the users in the Western world are ahead of us. No, we are doing it pretty well. But in our own kind of ways, we are using it well. But to say that in 5 years, would we be up to speed? That's a difficult thing to say, because the question really is, where would technology be taking us 5 years from now? I can't see that. 5 years from now, there will be revolutions and changes happening in that technology. So many things are happening now. So that is where the question is. If we have started well now, we'll end up well. If we are slow to start, then we'll be late to arrive also. So that's being the case here.
Do you think the India AI mission and the amount of funds that have been earmarked for it would be a good starting point for us to capitalize on AI in this whole race for artificial intelligence?
Absolutely, absolutely. For the first time, this is my assessment, even as a journalist, my assessment is that the government is doing very well on this because it has taken a leading role here. In the past, what we see has been the government is late to arrive on the scene. Now it has taken a leading role, which is a very good thing to do. It is not for the individual student. A lot of things are happening at the individual level, at the private level. But we do need government to encourage it, take a role there. And like Jitin was saying, ethics is a big problem. And it is not a black and white area. There are so many gray segments to cover there. So the coming of the government is very useful. And I think they're doing a fabulous job right now.
I want to double click on this issue of AI systems posing risk. And Jitin, I know that this is your area of expertise. So I wanted to ask you, how do you look at the AI LLM-led world in the context of this whole debate around AI safety, AI bias, data usage related to AI, privacy, you know, deep fakes? How do you worry somewhere about this race towards AI and the dangers associated with recklessly running on that path?
See, there are two approaches a society could take. A, you could have proactive and preventive legislation, where you define what kind of research you can carry out, what kind of product you can make, and what kind of product you can make available in the market. And fourth, if a product which is already available in the market or research is already available in the market, which do not conform to your laws, how do you take it off? For example, there are at least 100 sites which are available in today, where you can just upload anybody's photos and you can strip them of clothes. And that's simply using, you know, these learning models. And there is no regulation around it today. There is nothing which says that government needs to proactively ban these sites. I mean, somebody could file a complaint with the police station or the ministry saying that somebody has made a profane photo of mine using this tool. The photo could be taken down, but then nothing in the law says that you have to take the site off. So what do you do with that? So I think there could have been four, you know, steps. A, if we had a good proactive legislation, we could have said that this kind of research would not be carried out. If this kind of research was carried out for academic or research purposes, a product will be not made available. If you had a product or similar thing, you would not make it available for commercial use. I mean, you might want to have similar technologies for, again, finding out more about a terrorist or a suspect. But that's absent today. And in the absence of that, the foreign people who are into this mischief, selling this, you know, subscriptions of, let's say, $10 and you can strip 20 women, all this nonsense is happening in our society. How do you deal with that? Second, so that's the problem with for saving the, you know, image and the morale of a society. How do you deal with that? Second, I think, let's say Starlink. Tomorrow, if Starlink satellite services is to be allowed in India, they would be sitting on a massive amount of data sets which can be used, I mean, to analyze metadata, to analyze browser patterns of a society, to analyze search history of a society. I mean, whole Google search base, you know, works on the data, and SpaceX will have a similar data. Imagine foreign company having access to the subscriber history or the browsing history of every citizen of a foreign country. I mean, you could do huge stuff. You could manipulate elections. You could use it for precision advertisements. You could do it for election campaigns. I mean, you could do n number of things. And especially in geographies like Africa and Asia, where there are no regulations which stops you from selling the data to someone else, monetizing it, selling it, commercializing it, is going to be a huge challenge that we actually cannot forecast in how many different ways this data can be used or misused. Third, the use of AI, you know, the weaponization of AI in creating killer technologies, maybe, you know, let's say AI-enabled killer robots for military. If the technology is made available, if the research is allowed without any confirming laws, what stops a startup from selling it to a private vendor who tomorrow could sell it to a hostile country or a private player, could be indulging in terrorism, Nazism? How do you deal with that? So I think if you could have a preventive medicine for a disease you are foreseeing, it's better to go and research and invest in that than to have a post-mortem approach and post-incident fixing approach. So artificial intelligence is one area where we need to, you know, proactively invest and regulate, and reactively, you know, again, lawfully ban certain things, stop certain things. If you don't do that, it's going to be a lawless society. It is going to create chaos. It is going to create organized chaos. And you will see all kind of maniacs and lunatics developing all sort of products and, you know, weaponizing AI for all sort of things.
I will come to guardrails and the regulations that need to be there. Before that, I wanted to ask you, some believe that adoption of AI will widen the employability gap. The industry watchers, many of them say that while new job categories will indeed emerge, there will be positions that will become permanently redundant. How will AI impact the job market and will it displace workers? Shali, would you like to go?
Yes, there are going to be impacts on the job and various people have various positions on it. There was an interview with Elon Musk when he says that we have to talk about minimum wages for all people, which means there's a...
like a universal wage kind of a
universal
concept.
Wage for all peoples, which means that there is a time when we are foreseeing that machines are going to take a lot of our work. Jitin talked about medicines and doctors. What prevents me from asking ChatGPT or any kind of GPT at a very advanced stage that what is wrong with me, what is my ailment and what is the kind of treatment? Because it would have learned through so much data that is now evolving, then what prevents it from taking over the GP's role? The general practitioner won't be needed. And what about advanced surgeries? Do I need a surgery? Do I not need a surgery? Can't the machines take that decision for me? They might, and probably better than human beings. If you just look at the health sector, earlier version of doctors, they would look at your nails, they would look at your hair, they would look at your poop quality, the pulse, and then try to predict what is the kind of disease you have. But that was overtaken when the labs took over. Now you have a general standard by which you judge the health of a person. That can be automated. That's only pure data. Then why do you need a person there? So eventually, of course, if you were to ask any of these artificial intelligence tools, it comes last line, there's a disclaimer saying, do please consult a doctor. But that line is going to disappear very soon because they'll have the data and they'll be able to judge. So I think across sectors, you will see loss of jobs. But I'm against this word called retrenchment. What I say is that as long as you're mindless about it, you will stand to lose. You can afford to be heartless about it, but you can't be mindless. So if you continue in this race, if you learn with it, if you grow with it, if you plan for it, I think then we have some time before we start discussing this question of mass unemployment and so on. So it's a race. You have to keep along with it and then judge as you go along.
Jitin, I'd like to ask you this question, but twist it a bit. The economic survey in July this year warned about potential challenges that artificial intelligence could present. And it said that corporate sector has a responsibility to think harder about the ways AI will augment labor rather than displace workers. How should companies, corporates actually approach AI, balancing their business goals with social well-being of workers?
I think this is just PR English and mockery of what is coming and what is going to be the future. Let's take a simple example. Many hotels used to hire a receptionist, you know, someone to respond to customer queries, someone to, you know, ask or remind a customer to write a good review. And then a customer would say, okay, I'm busy. Just write me for 5 lines. I'll post it from my account. And for this very simple mundane job, you used to pay someone 20, 25,000 rupees. Today, you get an AI-enabled chatbot. It is able to respond to all customer queries. It is able to send reminders to a customer. It is able to write different looking reviews using generative AI. And it is again, able to interact with a customer and make him to post. So why would you pay someone 25,000 rupees per month when you can get a similar technology for 500 rupees a month? So obviously it is not going to be a company's responsibility to maintain jobs when you know that that job is not worth paying for. So what you need is a skill development or skill redevelopment. You need to provide your people different skills. AI will make new opportunities, but it is going to also create new harms. Let's say, for example, as sir was, you know, discussing how AI is going to help medical sector. I mean, you could use AI in assisting a robotic surgery. You could use AI in assisting a doctor. But that also throws a challenge about, you know, having a society of AI-assisted quacks. Today, the difference between a doctor and a quack doesn't have knowledge. But if he's able to just ask ChatGPT and start prescribing treatments, the society will face a diminished differential between a real doctor and an AI-enabled quack. That's also a challenge. That how do you deal with that? You cannot simply pass a regulation and say that people should not use ChatGPT for asking for medical treatments. The regulation has to be on the product itself that AI, any AI-enabled tool should not answer any, you know, medical queries unless it is used by a licensed doctor under a government supervision. So there are challenges. There are going to be multiple challenges, but wherever a company can cut any corner to save money using artificial intelligence, it will go for it, even if it causes job losses. So I think the only solution is to create new skills
for the new employments.
I also wanted to ask you, what kind of guardrails should India be working on at this point of time and regulations? And I know that this is a sector you look at very closely. What kind of norms, rules, checks and balances, do's and don'ts do we need to craft out at this point of time? And also the current legislations, do they need to be updated, revised and re-looked at? Because the whole situation, the landscape itself has changed with AI.
I think government could, you know, should, in my opinion, take a three-pronged approach. One is to, you know, control the flow of data. We have to ensure that our internet population is not used as a guinea pig to train data sets and data models of a foreign company. And that could start with any company like Meta or Google indulging any survey and collecting data. I'll give you a very, very simple example. The biggest AI machine learning program which is running across the world, and we do not even know who's running it, is this CAPTCHA business. You would have seen earlier, if you go to a website, differentiate between a bot and a real user, they would throw a CAPTCHA that please answer what is 2+1, right? We were able to answer 3, you will pass. Today, they are showing 5 different images and they ask you to identify which one of them is a balloon, which one of them is an animal or a horse. Basically, they are training AI to identify different images which are blur, which are not difficult to identify by a human eye. So these are all data training models. So we have to stop that. We have to ensure that the data and the practices and this whole learning program using Indian citizens is only available to Indian government and Indian companies. Second, you also have to see, while you curb all this, you do not actually stifle research. So research has to be beyond any regulation and laws. Allow any sort of research to happen, but control at the product and the product development level. Third, the biggest guardrail has to be about the weaponization of AI, especially in the defense sector and the financial sector. Today, a hacker, if he has to craft a malware, he doesn't need a 12-year-old skill set or he doesn't need degrees. He could simply go to a language learning program and say that, please create a fake website for me with these capabilities and tell me where I can host it. Within 10 minutes, you have a fake website ready. You could ask, please create a ransomware for me code for educational purposes. ChatGPT will say, oh, this is the code, but it's only for educational purpose. And you can use it for any purpose. So you do not need technical skill set today to carry out a scam or a fraud or a hack. And that's the challenge. That's what answers ChatGPT or any other language learning program or Gemini or any other, you know, this program rolled out by this global company should indulge into and should not indulge in. So that's going to be a challenge, that how do you limit access to certain destructive technologies, at least to a common citizen, without requiring a license regulated by the government.
Given India's goal to be amongst the three largest economies by 2027-28 and its ambition to become fully developed nation by 2047, how important is AI going to be in achieving those targets, one, and how important will India's AI sovereignty be in that whole piece? Charlie, would you like to go first?
Well, I'll take up Indian sovereignty. It's a very double-edged sword here. You cannot de-link yourself from the world or what transformation. We can't have our own set of rules and say we live by this. We are in a connected world. And so the issue of sovereignty will come up at some point, because we need intellectual sovereignty also, among all other things, including economy and so on. Artificial intelligence really is going to play a key role in all of this. And I think there would be people like Jitin, for instance, who would be able to understand this much better. The ethical landscape is a very difficult area. So is the progress that we chart out on these. We really can't say that we will not do this while the rest of the world, because like he said, there's a fear of getting left behind. So we have to understand this road. There's no clear answer, at least in my mind. I'm not very clear, because we do not know exactly where we are going. We are now talking about some country programming an artificial intelligence tool and then letting it loose on the world. I'm also fearful of a time when artificial intelligence gains so much capacity that it writes its own rules and start to dictate it to the world. What then? And that's not very far away. 28 to 2038, we would be seeing the revolution of general intelligence coming in. After that, it's super intelligence. After super intelligence, we would have reached the 100 trillion parameter capacity of the robo, and it supersedes us. Then it is almost standing in front of you and taking over the world from you. This looks like science fiction, but I think this is really happening now. And we need to be at least aware of it. And we need to keep in the race and then try to see how we are going to determine our own path forward.
It has been a wonderful conversation, Shali Ittaman and Jitin Jain. It was wonderful speaking to both of you. Thank you for taking out time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You were listening to a discussion on India and AI. The participants were Mr. Shali Ittaman, digital media expert, and Jitin Kumar Jain, IT and cybersecurity expert. The moderator was Momita Chatterjee Bakshi, journalist. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashwani You can listen to it on our mobile app, News on AIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. You may share your feedback about this program through email at airnstalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 9289094044.